Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 256 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to be talking about eggs and, you know, the choices that we have if we want to have our own eggs being produced in our homes. And the choices are something that a lot of people don't even consider, really. A lot of people think, well, if you want eggs, we're going to go and get some chickens, and that's all there is to it. Or perhaps they might think, we can't have chickens for whatever reason, therefore we can't have eggs. Well, you have a lot more choice than just chickens. So maybe what you want is more than one type of egg for various different reasons, or maybe you want to specialise in something other than chicken eggs for whatever reason. But whatever you want to do, we're going to talk about the differences between quail eggs, chicken eggs, duck eggs, geese eggs, all of those kinds of things. Not so much the differences between the eggs, although we will get into that a little bit, but more about the differences between the birds and the choices and what might be right for you. Now, I think I certainly rely heavily on our eggs here. Not only do they provide us with a small income that pays for all of our animal feed, but they also provide us with our flour, because we trade some excess eggs for flour with our bakery that's next door. So eggs are just amazing for, you know, commerce as well as for the table. Now, I think anyone who's semi-serious about moving towards self-sufficiency, unless you're a vegan, I think eggs are going to be a cornerstone part of that thought process, because they just are so prevalent in so many things that we eat. You know, we use them to bind dishes, we use them to make batter, we use them to make cakes. And of course, they provide the basis of so many meals just on their own. You know, eggs on toast is a fantastic breakfast staple, and why wouldn't it be? So eggs are just an amazingly valuable part of any self-sufficiency planning that we might be doing. Now, of course, most people that buy eggs in the supermarket, I would guess, I've got no data to back this up, but I would guess probably 99% of people that live in Western civilizations that buy eggs, if not more than 99%, are buying chicken eggs. So much so that they're not even called chicken eggs, are they? When we go in the supermarket, they're just called eggs in the egg section. All the eggs there are chicken eggs, and anything other than chicken eggs will be labelled as quail eggs or duck eggs, and probably command a premium price because of their rarity insofar as their place within the commercial food system. But we don't need to think of it that way when we're the ones housing the animals. So there's a huge discrepancy between the sizes of eggs and the sort of housing requirements needed for each of these different animals. So we're going to talk a little bit about those now. Now, I'm going to predominantly talk about quail, chicken, duck and geese, because these are the four that I think are most commonly considered, for good reason, within the homesteading environment. And we will also touch on a bit later just the idea of some other options that you might have. But I think there's a fantastic website I found when researching for this episode called bestfarmanimals.com, and they've got a great piece on this, which goes into a lot of the, you know, the data on the nutritional values of the egg. So I'm not really going to go in too much detail into that here, but if you did want to learn a little bit more, that is a great resource to check out. And I will be leaning a little bit on that website throughout this podcast. So that is, let me check, bestfarmanimals.com, and it's well worth having a look. So there's lots of different things to think about, and the average size is massively different. So the average quail egg is about 9 grams, and the average chicken egg is about 5 or 6 times that, at just under 50 grams. Duck eggs are even bigger still, about 1.5 times the size of a chicken egg on average. And, you know, that means that there's about 15 or 16 quail eggs to each duck egg. So all of these things need to be factored in. And of course, a goose egg is much bigger still. I would guess probably 5 times the size of a chicken egg, if not more. So you're talking maybe, what does that work out to? Sort of 25, no, more than that. Yeah, about 25 or 30 quail eggs to a goose egg. So, you know, these are all things to consider when we're doing our breakdowns. If you want to consider which is going to be the best for you, you're going to want to consider not just the number of eggs they produce because of that. You know, it could well be that you have an animal that produces twice as many eggs, but they're only 1/5 of the size. So, you know, it's not a like for like comparison. So you need to take all of that into account. And I'm going to hopefully help you do that maths and work through that today. But first of all, we're going to talk about animal housing and which animals are better for, you know, your environment. And quails, chickens, ducks, geese, they all have very different living requirements. And that's something that you're going to want to consider if you're, you know, considering getting your first bird. So quail are obviously much smaller than all the others. And because of that, they're going to need a lot less space to be healthy and happy. They've been raised primarily for meat production in history, but recently they've become more and more widespread as egg layers. Now, they're only going to need, depending on where you look, about 1 square foot of space per bird. And that means you can keep them in a fairly small enclosure, comparatively speaking. Now, you can free range them, of course, and any free range animal is going to be that little bit healthier and happier. But they do have a propensity to disappear. So you're probably going to want them in some kind of enclosure, however you look at it. Whereas chickens, they're going to have a bigger space requirement. They're generally going to need sort of 2 or 3 times the space per bird. And again, a free-range chicken is going to be that much happier and healthier. And the benefit of a free-range chicken is you can just fence them off. You know, you don't need to enclose the roof of the pen necessarily if you want to keep them in a certain area or to keep predators out. Now, the other benefit of quail over hens, perhaps, apart from the space you need, is that perhaps you live in an area that's got restrictions on chickens or restrictions on roosters, if not on chickens. And those restrictions might not be in place for quails. So that might open up an egg-laying bird to you in an area that perhaps you hadn't considered it. Ducks are going to need a bigger space again than hens. They really are quite mobile. And on the website I've been referring to, they recommend an average of 15 square feet per bird for ducks. But I personally have always free-ranged our ducks as much as we possibly can. And the other thing to consider is most but not all breeds of ducks are really going to benefit from a pond. They need that access to clean water that they can really immerse themselves in and clean themselves thoroughly to be a happy animal. Now, with all of these animals, particularly though with ducks and chickens, there's a wide variety of breeds within the species. So that's another thing to consider. Indian runner ducks, for example, aren't going to have too much interest really in getting in and out of a pond that often. At least that's my experience. Ducks also have the added benefit of they're generally going to leave your more mature plants alone. So they can be much more useful in and around a vegetable garden at slug clearance because they're pretty much going to ignore your established plants, whereas chickens will do a lot more damage to a crop in your vegetable garden. Now, geese need a much bigger space because they're much bigger birds. Now, we used to keep our geese in the same paddocks that we keep our goats in, so they obviously had loads and loads of space to roam. Now, geese can be aggressive. They can be great guard dogs because they can be quite noisy, especially when strangers arrive. So that's another advantage or disadvantage, depending on how you look at it. Now, of course, all of these animals are going to have similar requirements with regards to actual husbandry. They're all going to want somewhere to sleep that's safe and dry. They're going to want somewhere they can eat and drink. And I've spoke about all those kinds of things in other episodes, so I'm not going to get too much into the nitty-gritty of that. But, you know, you're going to want to make sure they've got access to fresh, clean water every single day and some feed. And if possible, you're going to want some way of getting them that feed in a way that it's not going to end up being eaten by vermin. Now, something else to think about with ponds and geese. Geese also will benefit greatly if they have access to a pond, although it's not necessarily as important as it is for some of the duck species, or should I say breeds. But the other thing, if you're going to have a pond, is you're going to find that the area around that pond can get quite muddy. So it's well worth considering all of these elements before you both decide what you're going to have and also start instigating these things and planning where they're going to go. So these are all the differences in the amount of space that these animals are going to need. So if you've got a big amount of space, then obviously you can go for whichever one you prefer and suits your needs in other ways. We're going to talk about the sort of feed requirements and the return on those feed requirements for all of these animals in a little bit as well. We're going to talk about what sort of return you're going to get per money spent on the feed. How much egg are you going to get? How much bang for your buck? We're going to talk about all of that. So the other thing to consider before we get there, though, is, you know, what sort of hardiness do these animals present? So, you know, generally speaking, that the larger the bird, the hardier and healthier it is. And this is pretty much true of quail, chickens and ducks as well. Quail can get quite scared and they're quite flighty, and sometimes they can frighten themselves so much that they fly upwards and knock themselves out or knock themselves dead against things or have a heart attack from the stress. So there are lots of little things that can cause a sudden death in quail, and they're more of a bit like a mini chicken that's much more fearful. But this can be obviously managed by frequent exposure to people and what have you. And the more time you spend with any animal, the more friendly and calm it's going to be around you. But it is something to consider. And the same again with all these animals is their exposure to illnesses and bugs. And there are lots of obviously parasites and things that live on or through our chickens and every other type of animal we might keep. But chickens are a little bit hardier than quail in that regard. And generally, they're going to do well with those sudden noises and visitors and all those kinds of things. And the same, I would say, would apply to ducks and, of course, geese. Now, when it comes to the worms and mites and ticks and all of those things that each of those birds can get, I'll be honest, and we haven't actually had too many problems. I would suggest that for any animal, the biggest, you know, barrier to disease and illness is going to be a really healthy, nicely sized run where they can live. And just that general ability to perform their natural behaviors and live a natural life, they're going to do pretty well at defending themselves against those things. Now, of course, just like humans, they can get ill. Everyone can get ill. But I think the most important thing is about giving them the space and the feed and the general animal husbandry that they need. And that's going to be your best defense against most of those illnesses. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So now the important bit is which egg costs more to produce, and again, I'm not necessarily going to talk about the actual cost per egg. I'm going to talk more about the cost per gram of egg, shall we say. Now, this is, again, information for the quail, chickens and ducks that I'm getting from the website that I mentioned earlier, bestfarmanimals.com. And it really is quite enlightening. Basically, it goes on to say that the amount of food per day per animal is basically, for a quail, it's 14 to 18 grams of feed. For a chicken, it's 35 to 60 grams, depending on the breed. And for ducks, it's 170 to 200 grams per day. Now, this is based on their research, and obviously we tend to not have to spend too much on animal feed here because we've got lots of ways we go about doing that, and I will talk about that at the end of this episode as well. Now, they don't mention geese, and from my experience, all I can say is that geese generally, if you've got pasture land for them to run on, they cost very, very little to feed indeed. I would say less than even a chicken per day, because during the summer months, the same sort of months that you would graze livestock on fresh grass, they're going to get most of their diet just from grazing. They're going to need very, very little supplementary feed. And in the summer, we would only give our geese a tiny amount of corn every now and again as a treat or as a way of coaxing them where we wanted them, if we wanted to get them shut in or whatever it is we were doing. So that's just something to bear in mind. Now, the average feed cost per year per bird, the website works out as following, and this is in dollars, so you can translate this however you wish, but for a quail it's approximately $22 a year, and for a chicken it's approximately $42 a year, so approximately double, and for a duck, really surprisingly, $230 a year. Now, I was really, really stunned by that. But when they broke everything down, and again, they went into, you know, the average eggs per day or per year and the average size of the eggs, the average cost per egg worked out for quail at 12 cents. For chickens, it worked out 15 cents. And for ducks, $1.27, which is stunning to me. I think with free ranging, all of these costs would come down considerably, particularly the ducks. But the interesting thing right at the end is the average cost per egg gram. So for every gram of egg that you get. Now, I'm going to times all these by 100 because I think that's the easiest way of looking at the data here. So for 100 grams of quail eggs, the cost is $1.30. For 100 grams of chicken eggs, the cost is 30 cents. And for 100 grams of duck eggs, the cost is $1.80. So there's quite a few things to note here. First of all, the data that they produced this from used examples of feed that can be found on Amazon, which certainly we can pay a lot less for. The other thing to say is different animals are going to have different feed requirements with regard to where we can actually source other types of food. Maybe we're talking about kitchen scraps, maybe we're talking about things that are trimmings from our plants before they've made their way to the compost pile, or other sources of free animal feed, something I've done several episodes on. Now, in addition to this, if you're going to be buying in bulk, as we now do, we buy our chicken food by the pallet load, and we basically go in with my brother-in-law, who keeps a similar number of hens. So we're actually paying half the cost for our chicken feed than we would pay in the agricultural supply stores. So you can definitely get all of those costs down. And again, not mentioned on this website is the geese. And I don't know how it really compares to those data. But what I do know is they're actually incredibly cheap to keep because of the nature of how they feed. So we used to sell our goose eggs for £1.50 each. And that would more than pay for the goose food if we were having to find the money that way, if you know what I mean. So I think they're definitely all economical choices if you're sensible about how you can house them and how you can procure your feed. There's lots of different ways of feeding your animals beyond buying shop-bought feed for them. So I think that's definitely something to consider. And again, everyone's circumstances and environment is going to be different. So there's a few other factors to consider when we are comparing these eggs, and that is, first of all, the taste. Now, most people report that quail eggs taste fairly similar to chicken eggs, and that duck eggs have a bit of a stronger or creamier taste than a chicken eggs. Quail and duck eggs have a higher portion of yolk to white than chicken eggs, and that can be desirable. It certainly is in our house. I would also say something we haven't mentioned yet is bantams. Bantams give you that sort of in-between area between chickens and quail insofar as space, but they also have a much higher level of yolk to white in their eggs. Another advantage of a certain breeds of chickens and certain bantams like the Pekins we have here, and this is fairly true of chickens with feathery feet, is that they're much less likely to dig up your plants. That's not to say it's a hard and fast rule, that, you know, it's not a hill you can die on, but it's definitely a sort of a guideline, a rule of thumb. Another thing to consider is that some people are actually allergic to chicken eggs, and these people can eat duck eggs, or some of these people can eat duck eggs. And the opposite is also true. Some people who are allergic to duck eggs may not be to chicken eggs. So duck eggs are also preferred by a lot of bakers because they have something called albums in much higher quantities in their eggs, which makes the baked goods fluffier and lighter than when they were to use chicken eggs. You can't just substitute one duck egg for one chicken egg, though, as we've said, you know, because of the size of these eggs. And the same would go for quail eggs. So generally, you would substitute about two duck eggs for three chicken eggs, and smaller amount of eggs if you, you know, you'll need to experiment with how you want to split them up based on the recipe. So the other thing to think about when you're cooking as well, if you're doing particularly fried eggs, is that duck eggs have a little bit less water in them. So if you overcook them, they can get a little bit rubbery. I've certainly been guilty of doing that in the past. They're harder to whip, duck eggs, because of the lower water content. And I think that covers it pretty much. I mean, there are a few other things to consider. You know, ducks are generally not quite as clean as chickens, so there's going to be a little bit more cleaning involved with your eggs, although you want to keep all of your egg cleaning to a minimum, really. You don't really want to disturb the bloom on the outside of the egg, which is a natural antibacterial mechanism to stop the eggs going off. But if you're going to be eating them within a few days, that really wouldn't affect you. And, you know, there's lots of other peripheral things to consider. You know, the shell color, if that's something that is of interest to you, then you're going to want to look at different breeds as well. The ducks do have a tendency, if you're free ranging them, to hide their eggs somewhere you're not going to find them. So something else to consider. But overall, I think it's really difficult to say that there is a clear favourite. It, you know, people do tend to go for chickens, and I think that's mostly due to the fact we're used to eating chicken eggs. For me personally, the reason we currently have chickens for eggs only is because they are easy to get hold of. They're cheap to get hold of. We can rehome some ex-battery hens and give them a nice life. They're easy for us to sell the eggs at the side of the road, and we can feed them at a very, very low cost. The reason we personally aren't using quail at the moment, and that's not to say that we won't in the future, in fact, in the very near future, we may be, is because, among other things, the actual eggs, I think, personally, are a bit of a faff in the kitchen. Just having to mess around with 16 egg cracks rather than one or two is, you know, a bit more work for me. And they don't crack as easily as chicken eggs. I have heard that they have their own sort of, you can buy a quail egg cutter, which is a bit like a cigar cutter, to open them. And I think if and when we decide to go down the route of quail for eggs, we will definitely be investing in one of those. The reason we don't have ducks at the moment is because of the ongoing tragedy of the pond. But when we move to our new, hopefully what will be a piece of land that we will own forever, then we will certainly go back to considering putting a pond in as one of the first things. And one of the reasons we'll do that is because we do want lots of ducks, and we will be having and selling duck eggs. The reason we don't have geese at the moment is really just down to happenstance. We had geese just at the start of the pandemic, and we were made a ridiculous offer. Someone offered us a ridiculous amount of money for our geese, and I just couldn't say no. So we sold them, and we just haven't been in a position where they've come up. But they're a really easy animal to keep. Again, geese, the reason we like them, and this isn't foolproof, please don't take this as gospel and use it yourself, but if you live here in the UK, one of the biggest challenges to keeping poultry is keeping them fox-proof. Well, we had a flock of four Emden geese, which are quite quite big, and they were just foxproof on their own. And I've heard tales of foxes taking geese, and I'm not saying that this will work for everyone, but for us, it certainly did. And this is during a time when, you know, we knew we had foxes on the property, and they just seemed to deal with them. So that was a real benefit to them here. And yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. So there you go. That's everything I can think of to share about different types of animals for eggs. I think eggs, as I mentioned right off the bat today, are one of the cornerstones of food production. They're one of the cornerstones of self-sufficiency. If you're not a vegan, they are just they're like this. You got plants. And we grow some herbs and then we grow some vegetables. And then the next step beyond that for almost everyone is introducing some eggs. And then chickens are kind of a gateway animal that open up the world of all the other animals that we might choose to breed, whether that's to produce meat or dairy or whatever it is. But chickens are very much a starting point for something. They're like an acceptable pet. You know, no one's going to think you're a little bit crazy like they might do if you've got milking goats. No one's going to think that if you've got a few chickens. So many people have them that it makes them really, really accessible. So, you know, whether it's chickens or quail or duck or geese, I do strongly recommend that you consider adding some egg-laying birds to your homestead if you haven't already. And we haven't mentioned a couple of others, actually, that I wanted to touch on. I almost forgot. And one of which is turkeys. Turkey eggs are delicious, but they are not really the most prolific egg layers. Turkeys come with other issues. You have two choices to make. Turkeys are predominantly used for meat rearing. And as a result, most of the turkeys available are, I think they're called large whites or something of that nature. And they are the turkey equivalent of broiler birds. They have health issues if you want to keep them long term. They don't breed themselves very easily. So you'd want to go for a heritage breed if those things are important to you. And they're just not prolific layers like some of the other animals are. So that's why I kind of discount turkeys on the whole from the egg laying conversation. And the next one is rheas or ostrich birds. And these guys are amazing and they're phenomenal. But I think the type of space and housing requirements and feed that they need versus the, you know, the output of eggs means that they're not necessarily a very viable option for most people. They're something we've toyed with here in the past, and I can't imagine for the life of me that I'm going to go another decade or two without owning some at some point. But in terms of having them and someone asking me what they were for, I think predominantly here they would be for breeding meat. And, you know, selling fertile eggs to be bred or selling the offspring. I don't think we would be using them as a way of farming eggs for the table. I just don't think that that would be a very financially viable way of procuring your eggs, because when you take into account the actual cost of the animal to start with, you're talking, you know, probably 10 times the cost of a chicken. And I don't think they're going to give you 10 times the reward, not close. So those are all my, you know, closing thoughts on that. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please do get in touch. I'm going to open a post on the Facebook group about birds and animals and what birds you're going to have or already have, and invite you all to share your stories. So please pop over there and take part in the discussion. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I will speak to you really soon. Cheers. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.